in the 12-week scan, you know, it usually progresses through, there's the head, there's the toes. They kind of do that kind of thing, but it didn't take very long for the sonographer to go very, very quiet. And he said, there are a lot of things that I'm seeing here that make me unhappy. And he went on to tell us this fetus has a number of issues that some of them on their own we might be able to do something about after he's born. But what I'm seeing here is a fetus that's not compatible with life.
Well, it's a very difficult set of circumstances for any parent to go through. Hearing that at just 12 weeks into a new pregnancy, you have the option to either terminate the pregnancy early or carry the baby until he or she dies on its own. And that's what our guests today on Focus on the Family Australia were faced with. Andy and Tennille Bunger will share about their decision and the impact that it had on their lives. That's coming up on today's Focus on the Family Australia with family counselor Deb Sorensen.
Where do we start with telling a story about your family and about Raphael?
I guess to go back to the beginning, you would say that we got to the point in life where we were well and truly ready. We thought it was the right time to have a second child.
Mm-hmm.
For us, we really felt that it was, you know, a nice gap, 2-year gap between our kids. And so, yeah, we got pregnant. We were very excited to have a second child. We thought, gee, this is pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And we were making a lot of announcements very early on in the pregnancy to different people that we were quite public that we were pregnant. And then the 12-week scan came along.
And when we think pregnancy and people are announcing that they're pregnant, we automatically jump to a healthy newborn baby, don't we? And yet, that's not always the case, and it certainly wasn't the case for you.
Mm.
That's right. And even in those first 12 weeks, I think Tennille had a bit of a premonition that potentially something wasn't quite right.
Yeah, well, we both did. So we have a habit of whenever we're pregnant of always praying for the child at night. And Andy kind of got a sense that he really needed to pray that this one would be knit together fully and healthily. And at about 10 weeks, I started not feeling quite right. I had had a miscarriage in between Callan and Raphael. I started feeling a lot like my miscarriage and just went, something's not right. I don't quite know. And by the time the 12-week scan came up, we both kind of went in going, are we going to see a healthy child? What, you know, just not really knowing what to expect. And I had kind of prepared myself to see a one that wasn't alive anymore. So just, yeah, both went into that 12-week scan kind of knowing that something wasn't right, but uh-huh. not really knowing what.
Yeah.
And then when we saw a live one, but with obvious issues, we kind of went, well, now what? That's mm-hmm. not quite what we thought.
Yeah. So what was wrong?
He had a lot of issues. So in the 12-week scan, you know, it usually progresses through, there's the head, there's the toes, 10 fingers, 10 toes, and they kind of do that kind of thing. But it didn't take very long for the sonographer to go very, very quiet. And he started looking at different things that I didn't recognize. I'm no expert, but I'd been to a couple scans with Callan, and I was like, I'm not quite sure what that is. So he was looking at probably the most obvious things were that his Raphael's abdominal organs were formed outside of his abdominal cavity and just covered with a little membrane like a sheath. So they call that exomphalos. So he had that. His heart had a malformity. He had spina bifida. And what am I forgetting?
Clubbed hands and feet.
Yeah, clubbed hands and feet. Fluid in the brain. So he had a lot of things going on. And the sonographer said to us after a very long silence, he said, there are a lot of things that I'm seeing here that make me unhappy. And we said we were a bit concerned that might be the case, just based on, for no particular reason other than that we kind of had felt that way. And he went on to tell us this fetus has a number of issues that some of them on their own we might be able to do something about after he's born. But what I'm seeing here is a fetus that's not compatible with life.
Okay, yeah. So then you were faced with a big decision.
That's right. We had a huge decision.
Mm. We did another test to just confirm that, yes, it was trisomy 18, and then just to decide, do we walk this path and see how long it lasts? There were also three cysts in the umbilical cord, which could explode at any time, and the doctor was concerned that if those exploded, he wouldn't be able to get food and nutrients, and so thus could miscarry as well with that. So we ultimately had to decide, do we walk this road or do we terminate? And we didn't know, so we booked a termination to kind of leave that option open as we made the decision. We had about a week to make the decision. But I think one key part in making that decision was when we got the printout of the results, that's how we found out it was a boy. It said this male fetus has trisomy 18, and I think just knowing what it was, especially for Andy, was key to the whole process, because we had a son, and we know what that's like. Mm-hmm.
I think it might not have been different had it been a daughter, but I think it was the transformation from an it to a he or a she that was very powerful and really took the wind. And that came several days into the piece. I mean, right away after we were told this fetus is incompatible with life and it's your decision. You can terminate if you want to, you can carry on if you want to, but you have to make the choice and you have about 2 weeks to do it, was the brief we were given coming out of that first appointment. So that's where we basically had the brief. You have to decide basically in the next week, and if you're going to terminate, it's in the next 2 weeks. If you go further than that, your de facto decision is that you're carrying on with this pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. What did you decide in the end?
We knew we wanted to be unified. Mm-hmm. So whatever the outcome, whichever way it was, we had to be unified in it. And that was the journey in and of itself, is just coming to the agreement. But I'll let you share how we came to the ultimate decision. But
probably about 5 days after the scan that started it all off, I was at work and I had a manager call me. Nobody at work really knew what I was going through at the time. And a manager rang me and was talking to me about a project of mine. And he wanted to close my project. And we usually say close the project. He kept saying we should terminate your project. We need to terminate this project and start something else. We need to terminate. And he kept saying that word and I hated it. It just drove me completely crazy. And that night, as I was driving home from work, I was kind of processing through, why do I hate that word? And is this my life from now on, that I'm going to hear this word echoing every time somebody says it and hate it? And then it kind of dawned on me on that trip home. I thought, you know, the thing that you have left after you've lost a baby, like we were, for all intents and purposes, knowing we were going to do, the thing you have left is that baby's story. And I realized that wrapping that baby's story up with a word that I hate was probably not a very good idea, because then we lose everything. Then the story becomes something you can only tell to people basically in confidence, something that you don't really like to tell because it contains a word that you personally don't like. And so I realized, for me anyway, that to wrap that word up in with the story was actually to lose the only thing that we would have left after losing a baby.
Yeah. I want to honor God and I want to honor this child's life, and I don't feel that if I were to cut it short, that's me doing it, not God doing it. And I had been praying that I would miscarry again so I didn't have to make the decision. And but yeah, I really felt that if we went ahead with the termination, that was us making the decision, not God. So no looking back after that. That was the one shot to change course, and we didn't.
That's Tennille Bunger along with her husband Andy talking with family counselor Deb Sorensen. We'll have more of this conversation when we return right here on Focus on the Family, Australia.
You're listening to Focus on the Family Australia, and we'd love to hear from you. Why not send us an email at response@families.org.au? That's response@families.org.au. Please let us know if there's a topic or question you'd like us to discuss on a future program. Once again, that's response@families.org.au.
Welcome back to Focus on the Family Australia, where today our guests are Andy and Tennille Bunger, and they're discussing the difficult decision they had to make when 12 weeks into a new pregnancy, they were told their baby had a number of severe health issues. They were given the option to either terminate the pregnancy early or carry the baby until he died on his own. They're sharing about their experiences with family counselor Deb Sorensen.
In the process, did you pray for a miracle?
It was a big part of the journey all the way through, because from absolutely that first Sunday when a few friends knew what was going on and they saw us in church and they asked if they could pray for a miracle for us, all the way through, you know, we always felt that Raphael was exactly like he was encoded to be. It was his genes, it was his DNA. And we always felt he was different than a child who was born well and then became sick with cancer or whatever. We always felt he was growing exactly the way that he was encoded to grow deep inside of him. And so a couple of months after Raphael died, I had a friend. I was sitting and talking to him about the whole experience, and he said, "Would you change anything?" And I said, "No, I wouldn't change a thing, you know." And I said a few things about the decisions that we'd made, and he stopped me and he said, "No, I hear you saying that you have no regrets about what you've done, but I'm saying if you could completely change everything and Raphael comes out normal, hopping and skipping and jumping and doing all the normal things that kids do, would you change it?" And it bothered me. And in the rest of that conversation that day, the thing I shot right back at him was I said, "Would you change any of your kids?" And we both, I know that he and I both have kids who are very high energy kids and who there's some wonderful fun parenting challenges that come with that. And I said, "Would you change? Which of your kids would you change? Snap your fingers and make your firebrand into a teddy bear. Would you do it?" And he said, "No." He said, "Because I would be afraid I would destroy something about who they actually are." And I think that's how we really felt running all the way through as I look back. I think we always felt that we didn't want to ask for Raphael to be anything different than exactly what he was, and given that he could be the most that he could be from that starting point.
Knowing that you would only have Raphael for maybe even a day, a week, a short time, how did you go about getting to know Raphael and enfolding him into your family?
It's probably easier for me to know because, I mean, I would sometimes feel him moving, but we had to be more intentional about it for you.
Yeah, Tennille, obviously, she knew how Raphael moved and how he felt and could feel the differences between Raphael and Callan and all of this. Every night we carried on with our tradition or our ritual or whatever of me laying my hands on Tennille's tummy and praying and just making that physical connection each and every day. And then we really ramped it up when it came to the last week. We'd done a lot of things together, and we made a lot of thought habits of being conscious that Raphael is with us, especially when there was music involved at church and at other places where there was music involved, because we knew, we didn't know how well his ears had developed, but we knew that in principle he'd be able to be enjoying music with us. So we made thought habits like that of being together. And then the final week, we, before we had scheduled his birth, we did picnics and photos at the park, and we spent a day at the zoo, and we did all sorts of fun things like that together. So we really tried to make it a special week that we'd be able to mark in our memories as a time that we had spent just before he was born.
I know you talked about being so proud as a dad, you know, being with your whole family and
yeah, it was.
You know,
I wouldn't have normally thought of it this way with a baby who I was expecting to be born well, I don't think. I probably wouldn't have been quite in that headspace. But that day that we were at the zoo, it was the day before Raphael's birthday, and all four of us were together. And I just remember getting lunch in the little food court, and seeing dads being all kind of like dads are, carrying big trays of horrible fried food and wearing kind of nerdy clothes and cracking dad jokes. And I realized this is a place where dads are in their glory. And I was so, so happy that we had one day, even though I would have loved to have had hundreds, but we had one day where all four of us were in that setting together. And I got to be a dad in my glory, and so I was really, really thankful that Raphael had hung on as long as he had and that he gave us that day.
So Raphael survived the 9 months, lived the 9 months, and you had the scheduled C-section. Can we talk about his birth?
It was a mix of emotions because it is a surgery. I had never had a surgery before, so didn't really know how that was going to go in the recovery of all of that, and meeting, and then finding out that I actually get to meet our son. Excitement and apprehension and all of that. And unfortunately, I don't remember too much of the whole thing because I was feeling more than I should, so they gave me an extra dose of some medicine to help me not feel some things, which I do remember meeting Raphael and that whole time, and it wasn't until shortly after he had gone or that we could see he had gone that I kind of went as well. It is important that I do recall meeting him, and I couldn't hold him because I'm flat on my back for the cesarean, but I got to touch him and kiss him and all of that and see him.
From my side, it was very hard to tell what was going on. Once we got into the theater, I was watching it with great interest. And so I knew where the pediatrician and midwife were set up, so I knew that would be the route that Raphael would go. But I couldn't see anything because of the screen that they had set up so that Tennille couldn't see the procedure. And I had no idea really what point they were up to, except that at a certain point, I got the notion that Raphael wasn't there anymore. I thought that somebody had carried him away. And the obstetrician's eyes never really left the exact same place. You could not read him at all. And it was completely silent in the room. And when I thought to myself, Raphael has been born, and it was completely silent, I thought, oh, he didn't make it. He didn't survive. He came this far, and it didn't quite work out. And then about a minute later, the pediatrician came over to me and said, I'm completely amazed, but he's alive. Would you like to come meet him? And so I did. I walked around the equipment to the other side of the operating theater, and there he was. They'd wrapped him all up in a whole bunch of terry cloth towels. So he was quite a nice big bundle. It was easy to pick up. And the pediatrician said he took one breath and it didn't go very well for him. He took about half of a second breath. And I can't, as far as I can tell, he's not breathing, but his heart is still going, and I think you're going to have a little bit of time with him. And so I picked him up and carried him back over to where Tennille was laying, and she was in a fair bit of discomfort by this point, but we just held him, and we studied him, and studied him in every way possible. I mean, we kissed him and felt that he was warm and alive, and it was like this real confirmation that he is here. He is with us. There is blood surging through these blood vessels. And I looked in his eyes, which were open, and you could see, just like in anybody's eyes, we have little blood vessels that you can see that are usually kind of pinkish red. And there was one of those that was actually growing more and more red and pink. And he was pinking up a bit, and he was warm, and we just said to each other, he's thriving. He's doing so well. And that was just such a thrill, because we didn't even know he was going to make it to that day. And I think it's one of those things, you always want your kids to thrive, and for him that's what thriving actually looked like. And so we found him completely irresistible. We gave him lots and lots of kisses, and we did a lot of studying of his face. It was a perfect face that looked out from inside of this bundle of terry cloth towels. But then as time progressed, probably after between 15 and 20 minutes after he was born, we saw that the brightness that we'd seen in his eyes started to dull a little bit, and the brightness and pinkness in his lips started to go just a little bit duller, and those bright red blood vessels in his eyes started to turn a bit maroon. And there was just something about him that changed, and we said it almost together. We just looked at each other and we said, he's gone.
That's Andy Bunger along with his wife Tennille talking with family counselor Deb Sorensen about the death of their son, Raphael, which occurred while they were living here in Australia. But that is not how the story ends. Raphael's life continues to make a profound impact around the world as more and more people hear about him and hear Andy and Tennille share their story. We invite you to join us again next time on Focus on the Family Australia as we continue to hear their account. Now, as part of the funeral preparations, Andy wrote a very special letter to his son, Raphael. We'll hear it in its entirety next time, but right now, here's just a portion of it as dramatized by the Focus team in the United States.
And Raphael, this is why I'm so proud of you. Your life has been profoundly meaningful. Every time we saw you on an ultrasound, we also saw your heart beating away and you squirming as best you could. And we could see that you were getting 100% out of that body that you were given.
Well, a story like we've heard today can bring up a range of emotions if either you've lost a child yourself or if you have a special needs child. And if you're struggling with God's purpose in those challenges, please let us know. We're here to help. Our phone number is 1-300-300-361. That's 1-300-300-361. Also, our website is families.org.au. That's families.org.au. It has a number of helpful articles, and we have a number of supportive resources, including two books which relate to today's program. One is called A Special Kind of Love for Those Who Love Children with Special Needs, and the other is called Grieving the Loss of a Loved One. Both of these books are related to the themes we've heard on today's program and are available for purchase here at Focus on the Family Australia. I'm Eric Scadabo. Thanks so much for joining us for today's program. And once again, we invite you to join us for the second part of this conversation with Andy and Tennille Bunger. That's next time on Focus on the Family Australia.